And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
On today's episode of the Glue Guys, draft semi-preview episode.
Wow.
We're going to do something a little bit different here. Brian and I are going to diagnose who we like, yes, draft prospect-wise, but we're also going to sniff out which trades may be available, and we're going to use the Nets' own draft history to inform us about who they may want to pick in the upcoming draft.
Just a classic Glue Guys episode, Mike. Come right up. Welcome back to the Glue Guys. This is Brian. Say hello, Mike.
Hello.
Follow us on Linktree, on MySpace. Hit us up on, where else? Facebook.
All the places that you get a podcast, we are there in your ears, bringing you everything that is going on with the Nets. Brian, how are you?
I'm good. Are the Nets back?
The Nets are back.
Yeah,
the Nets are going to be back in a very short period of time.
How about that?
We just need to be prepared that basketball will be on our TV screens in a month. Like, there's going to be preseason games, and Kevin Durant is going to play in them, and he will be wearing a Nets jersey in a month.
One of many Nets jerseys. He'll pull one out of the quiver and throw it on. We've got all kinds of new jerseys. People love those jerseys.
Before we get into the actual episode, because we are going to talk about the draft, because it's a highly important draft for your Brooklyn Nets, there is something that I want to hit first.
Okay.
What is going on with the Nets jerseys thing? I think here, okay, there are a lot of jerseys that the Nets have rolled out. They have the classic white, classic black. They have the sort of the Dražen Petrović classic sort of wavy blue.
I liked how you judged the Z on Dražen. That was nice. Is that that's the native tongue?
Yeah, I'm a Balkan.
Yeah,
I'm a Balkan. There's also the Brooklyn artist that I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Jean-Michel Basquiat.
Very good. And now we have another jersey that is, I think, from someone else. Inspired by someone else, that is like it's a cursive Brooklyn. It's red, white, and blue. It's the
old ABA one with just like a
sort tip of our hat,
a 76ers kind of script on top.
So that's five jerseys that they have unveiled.
They got, did they end up having to not do the? I mean, I always get this wrong. It's either Coogie or Coogee. Coogie. Coogee? Oh boy. you know, it's one of those things where I just never learned it the right way, and then you know what happens.
Yep. And it's embarrassing to get it wrong because it feels like something that we should know. Right?
I lean into it. You know, I'm open to it. So anyway, so however you pronounce that, are we not allowed to wear that anymore? Did we like lose the suit? We lost
the suit. I think when it was truly revealed that he was a New York Knicks fan.
That was it.
No, they're allowed to, but they do this every year. They roll up. But to me, it's like,
wait, what's the beef though? What's the beef with all the jerseys?
It's a little too much.
What?
It's a little too much identity crisis. We're trying to appease too much of the fan base in too many different ways. Now, I love the sort of wavy, almost tie dye sky blue and white with the red font. Love it. And I like the basket. That's very cool. Excellent. And this newest version, which has been unveiled on Twitter, it does look too 76ers-ish for me. that it does. It's a little.
Did too anybody much else on, say that? Was that because I just glanced at it? I didn't follow the Twitter conversation. It read very 76ers to me. I didn't know if that was a common thing that was talked about.
I don't really scrape the internet for that type of
dialogue. Don't do that to me. Don't come over the top like that. Don't but you dare.
That's how you.
First of all, that's not even true. You are a deep. You get to the resin. You're down to the bottom.
I just think it's a little too much. I mean, it's cool, whatever. Cool jerseys, excellent. I think the black and white, the white and black, that brand, as Kevin Durant said, that's cool. You know, that's a good brand. And I think if you do one special jersey a year, I know that like by requirement of the Nike contract, they do three extra jerseys. Like I get that. So it's like part of the contract. I just think it's a little too needy. And in this moment, your Brooklyn Nets are the kings of New York, right? So the Nets have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. They do not need flashy jerseys.
It's too needy. That's a.
It's too needy.
It's too needy.
Have confidence in yourself. Have confidence in the black and white. White and black.
The Jean-Michel Basquiat. Basket.
He's Bruschetta. A basketball player.
Nice. Very Thank nice.
You. Sorry.
No. Great. Ugh. And he. It's good. It's good. He. That one's black and white. So that's cool. Just the issue, the lack of, it's just incorporating the red, white, and blue is your issue. You don't like that because especially Treboy Josai was, you know, super excited to reveal the red, white, and blue for the Jersey Roots for the interloping Jersey crowd. I'm
Stop
spitting.
It. Wait, you're spitting on the Jersey
crowd?
I am
an interloping Jersey crowd myself. So that's the self-effacing
humor. You're NJ
Trans
until you die.
That's correct. So just so we know, nobody come at me. That's me. So, but yeah, and I felt a little bit seen in that moment. I felt that Joe was reaching through the monitor, touching me.
To me, it was like the moment when I was a kid and I saw Jurassic Park and I saw a strong Jewish man up there and Jeff Goldblum being a sex symbol. Yeah. And I was like, finally, one of us is a sex symbol in a movie, you know, for so long.
Interesting.
You didn't feel
that way about Richard Dreyfuss and Jaws. You didn't feel that way.
Did he ooze?
I like
the only
that he,
okay. The only Jewish sex symbols in films were done by Jewish directors, aka, unfortunately, Woody Allen. He was the only Jewish, and it was a sex symbol of his own creation.
Yeah,
and let's not walk down that road.
I like Dreyfuss. I like Dreyfuss. He keeps dropping things in that movie. Every time you need some from him, he's like, bloop, fumbles it, and it's in the ocean. You're screwed. What else?
Anyway, too many jerseys.
We almost never flatly disagree on this show by design because we do 4 hours of pre-meetings. We get on the same page. The Coastal Media Elite phones in. They tell us what to think ultimately, and then we toe the company line. You know,
we fill out fake ballots. We send them in.
In this case, I am going against the grain here and saying that I love all the. I like. We should all have a new jersey every game. Why not? I mean, the brand is locked in, right? We did a good 8 years of the default. That white jersey was so tired. Let me tell you that white home. Somebody like very correctly called it. The default, like when you create a new team in like a NBA 2K franchise, that's the jersey you get. That's how I felt about that branding. It's great. Don't get me wrong. It's like, I'm using my air quotes here. Classic. It's a classic look, but like, I'm excited to get a little bit outside. And like the when we veered off, it would be into the gray pajamas that they were wearing, you know, all this stuff with the sleeves.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. I know where the sleeves went. They went in LeBron's closet because LeBron hated the sleeves so much. I'm going to do a talk radio thing. You ready for it? Five jerseys. What's next? A Nathan's hot dog themed jersey? What? A pork roll themed jersey? I mean, the Nets need to stick to their brand, Brian. They should be proud of their brand, and they're cowards.
First of all, I would be totally okay with a Taylor Ham.
Oh, not
style.
Pork roll?
Actually, so I
wait, what is it? Is it Taylor Ham V? What's the other way to describe?
This is actually a bet. This is one of the arguments that I always like. So I'm a Jersey guy, right? You know, you can tell. Married to a person from Philadelphia. And where they call it pork roll, they call it Taylor Ham in New Jersey.
One of the many corrupt Democrats from Philadelphia,
of course. And I've never disagreed with this because I've always thought that Philly had the right read on calling it pork roll, because just the brand is Taylor Ham. That's the name of the company that makes pork roll. Right. So if they ever come out with a different product and give it like they make bologna, what are you going to call that, Taylor Ham now, just because it's got the name of the company on the? You call an Oscar Mayer wiener and an Oscar Mayer bologna the same thing? It's just Oscar Mayer?
Does Taylor Ham make any other pork product, or do they only make pork roll?
If I was super invested in the defense of this argument, I would go look that up. I probably should have, because I've been in enough of this conversation. But I've been intellectually lazy here. But if they have a bologna product or anything that's not pork roll, this conversation is BTFO'd.
There is a website called jerseyporkroll.com. Of course they have... They call it, this is how they advertise it, original pork roll, a.k.a. Taylor Ham, made in Jersey and shipped to you. Mm-hmm. Now, they've got some delicious looking pork roll right now.
But you don't see anything else. There's no
indication.
No trotters, no ears, no other mystery meat on the conveyor belt there, nothing.
Anyways, Brian. So,
sorry, we are way off on the tangent. So glad.
I'm so glad to be podcasting with you.
We're just excited to be chatting again. Like, it's been so long.
I know. But Brian and I are both in very busy parts of our lives. I mean,
I have no excuse. You've got kids. You've got so many kids.
I've got kids just walking up to my door and staying inside my house at this point.
That's it.
It is insane. But, anyways, the NBA draft is almost here. But before we get to the NBA draft, I just want to say one thing, one news nugget that came out recently. So, the NBA seems to be on the verge of agreeing to a deal with the NBPA about what the next season will look like money-wise and all of that stuff. And the money thing's important. Just one thing I wanted to point out about that, because it kind of, I know once we start talking salary cap and luxury tax, kind of all gets mushy, and I don't fully understand it, but it's a thing you need to understand if you're a Nets fan, because the biggest question hanging over the Nets besides Kevin Durant's health and Kyrie Irving's health is, are they going to re-sign Joe Harris? And the biggest question about that, of course, has nothing to do with his talent and his fit on the team. He is the perfect player for a Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant team. But how much is he going to cost the Nets? If the Nets sign him for what is believed to be $10 million a year, $15 million a year, potentially $18 million a year, that is going to create a significant tax bill for America's favorite owner, Joe Tsai, who is obsessed with lacrosse and won't stop tweeting about lacrosse. And it's getting to be a little too much from someone who plays lacrosse. It's a little too much. Anyways, here's the key thing that came out. There in the ESPN story about the agreement potentially between the NBA and the NBPA. Here's the big thing. The league is going to, as of now, tie luxury tax bills to the drop in income. So meaning, okay, so the Warriors are projected, let's say, to have a $60 million tax bill. Well, if basketball-related income, the BRI, the income that the league brings in, it's supposed to bring in $9 billion, but that's projected, that is if they had full season of fans and all that fun stuff. Let's say it goes down 30% because there's no fans for 2 months or whatever. The luxury tax bill would decrease by 30%. So instead of $60 million, it's $42 million. You care about that as a Nets fan because it actually makes signing Joe Harris much more realistic, because what Joe Tsai will just simply have to do the math on is saying, okay, we are at the luxury tax line already without re-signing Joe Harris. The Nets are literally right at 132, which is the line. They add $10 million of Joe Harris, $15 million of Joe Harris. That adds another percentage on top of that, a luxury tax bill. Well, now that we know that luxury tax bills are going to be decreasing because income is going to be decreasing, it makes it less exorbitant for Joe Tsai to sign Joe Harris. So all that comes to say, the Nets are signing Joe Harris, Brian. There's no reason for you to, I know you've been up all night. I know you Brian hasn't slept for 48 straight days. You've just been thinking about Joe Harris. You've been watching his Instagram, hoping he will drop little nuggets to us. He hasn't. He's going to be back. Garrett Temple won't be back, but he'll be back. Joe Harris. NBA draft, Brian.
I did some looking at the draft, finally.
Well, give me, how do you look at the draft? How do you scout?
So here's what I do. You ready? This is my whole strategy. So I go to I just go NBA mock draft 2020 on the old Google. And I go and look at each and every one of them. And then I pull out everyone's pick, knowing full well that it's going to be someone totally different than any of those picks. But like, you know, I just want to see of the names, you know, who's going to recur more than once, what the story is. And then I go and watch YouTube videos of that player and try not to let the captions of like, he's got like this PNR efficiency of like plus 45, you know, I try not to let that get into my head too much. Right. I try to really feel the player, get inside their head, the fluidity of the game. You know, I do what you're not supposed to do, which is the thing that they do in Moneyball, which is like all the old guys are about to get fired in the beginning. Yeah. They're like, he's got an ugly girlfriend. that kind of thing. Just kidding. No, I try to incorporate as much of that statistical stuff as possible, but really I'm there for the memes.
I mean, the ugly girlfriend theory, is it wrong?
There's some stuff there to unpack. But anyways,
it's easier to have a better looking girlfriend these days if we're going to a better looking girlfriend, boyfriend, anything because of Instagram. Instagram is the great equal. If you're a semi-famous person, you're able to DM other attractive people on Instagram, and there maybe it is an instant connection. Where back in the day,
you just have to be a famous person,
a big fish in a little pond.
How do you think that worked back in the day? They just like went to the library like anybody else, and
just went to the old skip hop, you know, went to the old razzmatazz. Like,
I am rich and famous, but you know where else can I go? It's the Waffle House or nothing, and you know I'll make do with what I get.
I do think. That would be like the most hated draft website would be if we combined Moneyball like ugly girlfriend theory with my hilarious hairline theory. So if you don't know my hairline theory, if you look at the top 10 scorers of all time in the NBA, most of them are bald or were balding. I believe a receding hairline has something to do with greatness of a basketball player. Now,
you know, I was thinking about this recently. Did you see the Kevin Durant getting roasted on the internet for he's got like some, you know, bald spots on the back of his head now because he's got longer
Kevin
hair.
Durant.
They're a little bit more pronounced. Dude, I feel so bad for these guys, man. Like, people feel so comfortable just like railing against dudes who are balding. It's insane. The guy's losing his hair. It sucks. Like,
and it's also like, it's one of the, it's like, it is a profession where the camera angle like is directly on top of your head. So, like LeBron has been balding basically the moment since he got in the league, and he does use hair plugs. There's no question he's gotten hair plugs.
He's like a billionaire. Like, yeah, do whatever. You got experimental anything. Stick it in there. Go ahead.
Now, you would think with as much money as he could get a better setup on top of his head.
It just shows how far we have to go in the science.
It's kind of crazy, right? Yeah. If you really had to rank... We're about to get a coronavirus vaccine that is 90% effective, but yet we haven't figured out male pattern baldness.
Can't get them. It's tough. It is tough.
I do think there is, I think one of our former advertisers, which I will not name right now, even though they may currently be an advertiser, they've been trying to figure that out too. And I respect them for trying to do this, but
them combined, and everybody else.
Combine ugly girlfriend with receding hairline with your key diagnosis for whether an athlete is going to be good, his booty, his waistline.
Mm-hmm.
And
it'll be like the first, Mark Zuckerberg's first app was like Face Smash. It could just be like a version of that, right? Like something really simple, just like hot or not, you know?
Yeah, and look how well that's worked out for everyone.
I mean,
Facebook's been awesome.
Hey, any developers out there, hit me up. Let's make our billions, you know?
But okay, so what have you dug up?
Yeah,
who has impressed you? Who have you liked?
Last little bit on the hair thing. I can't think of a faster way to bad karma than making fun of somebody's bald spots. Like, you are going to lose your hair in a month if you start making fun of some other. Anyways,
so, and also my other theory, having had kids, I have two children at this moment, is that I think when a baby is born, you can almost tell their bald what their hairline is going to be like when they're an older man after a short period of time. I think babies' hairlines are indicative of what they will be like when they're older. So my first son, Rowan, Oh, terrible for him.
Oh boy, oh,
he's
buddy.
Screwed. Augie, as Brian calls him, Augie number two. Augie number two, solid head of hair. That kid.
Yeah,
he's gonna be surviving.
Yeah. So, anyways, my whole scientific process here is I just went and aggregated all the list of the names that other people came up with. Okay, some of them got hit on multiple different lists. Some of them got hit on the same list by multiple different authors from the same website. I'm not going to be naming names of those people. I'm just going to give their affiliation, as it were. I'm just going to go through a couple things that stood out. So, but before we do that, one of the things I do want to think about is just like macro questions for the draft, right? So let's set up the argument.
All right, Brian.
Always, you know, let's get macro. And so like the first thing that everyone often asks, and we are in an interesting situation, then that we're getting Kevin Durant back, Kyrie Irving, championship run, blah, 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 blah. Who cares? But the idea is, do you draft for high ceiling or win now, right? This is a time-honored conversation. It's a stupid false dichotomy. Of course, it's a cliche in sports talk radio, but you know, here we are, what are we doing? You know? But basically like it's leaning into the meme, obviously we're in win now. So I am not thinking I know that there is talk of stashing players and so on and so forth. The complexities of why one is stashed versus not stashed is way above my pay grade. You know, like why to stash versus not to stash. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. People have different reasons for it. Seems like you have an idea. You took a deep breath in.
Well, I took a deep breath in. Well, you keep going. Because I think it's going to be interesting that we're talking about this, because I have conflicting evidence towards your operating theory. So it'll present two different views. You are going for more win now. I'm actually going for upside, partly based on some information.
Wow.
Relate to us via John Hollinger of The Athletic.
Well, don't let me make an ass myself when there's information I don't know.
No. I mean, I think so. In Hollinger, he released a mock draft today. Okay. And in it, you know, about the Nets portion, he is them taking Tyrell Terry from mm-hmm. Stanford, who is like one of the best shooters in the draft.
That so fits into my thing. I wish we had. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
But he says in here, within there's four paragraphs that he writes about the Nets. The Nets want upside with this pick. And they get that with Terry's youth and shooting ability. And he mentions two names, and I'll say them now, and then we'll have a continue our discussion. Jaden McDaniels, who is the big from, you know, the athletic big from Washington, and Pokusevski, who I am obsessed with. I will never not be obsessed with a 7-footer who weighs less than I do and is a ball who handles the ball like a wing, who can shoot it from deep, but yet is again, skinnier than me at 7 feet. I will always be obsessed.
You want to hear a good quote that I pulled from him? From somewhere like NBADraft.gov or something.
Yeah.
The quote was Mike Dunleavy Jr. with a turbo button, which is, I thought it was a
fun. Fucking dope.
Yes. With a turbo.
Is that the greatest player of all time?
Yeah, right.
I was convinced Dunleavy was going to be like just an iconic wing. You know, just an absolutely bombing threes from all over the place and like a little point forward-ish.
Yeah.
Not that he wasn't
Didn't crack out. Okay. So anyways, well, interesting for Hollinger to go upside with this. I flatly reject it, but we'll see. We'll see who wins. And then the other thing is like, what are our needs? You know, that classic conversation and like, do you draft best player available versus like specific for your thing? Again, false dichotomy, a meme, you know, things don't like, there's a giant Venn diagram of how you see this stuff cracking out, but like, okay, at its furthest ends of the spectrum, if you're getting like an 18-year-old from Serbia or whatever versus a 24-year-old, you are expecting different things, different levels of maturity in the game. And so, so what are our needs, Mike? This goes into the whole big thing. You breathe in again. You had something to say.
No, I'm preparing for you to finish your question.
Oh.
And I will jump in and say the needs.
Oh, okay. So what are our needs?
Okay. I think the Nets could literally draft every position except for maybe center, though I like Pokusevski, and I guess he's more of a power forward than a center. I mean, I think they could draft a point guard even. I think they could draft, of course, wing is the most pronounced need, though. If you just get a 6'7 guy who can shoot threes, you're very happy with if you're the Nets.
You know what's... Sorry, go ahead.
What were you going to say?
Well, I was thinking, like, position-wise, what's interesting is that, like, I think with the way that the trends are heading in terms of, like, the you know, we're the size of the player seems to be like all over the place. It's not really necessarily like you could have a 6'8 center, 100% like that would work, you know, and you have, you know, PJ Tucker, blah, blah, blah. And I think that the real distinction in terms of the position is more, we should start like deferring to face up versus back to the basket as like the real key indicators of where you're playing, you know, back to the basket, i.e. you need to be closer to the basket, face up, meaning you don't. I think that's like where the positionlessness conversation should evolve to.
Yeah, it's basic. I think there, to me, there are three buckets. It's the ball handler guy, the wing, and then, as you're saying, back to the basket. Like Pogusevski, he may be a center, but he's not back to the basket center. Then you have other people like, I'm trying to think of like, I mean, even James Wiseman, he's never going to be a back to the basket center. I mean, maybe he will at some point, but like they're going to treat him. To me, he's Tyson Chandler. And I don't know if people remember what Tyson Chandler was like when he was coming out of high school. Tyson Chandler was like projected as Kevin Garnett 2.0 when he came out. And he obviously had an amazing career. I think he won Defensive Player of the Year. He won a championship with the Mavericks. Pretty much every team in the NBA at one point wanted Tyson Chandler or a clone of him because he was the perfect pick and roll big who played D. That's my James Wiseman. I know that's nothing to do with the Nets, but I think it's important to put something on that. What is your assessment of the Nets? Do you think need factors into what they're doing right now? Like, do you think Sean Marks is thinking, well, you know what, we need to, because we have such a good roster, we need to get someone that fits within that roster?
So for me, it's a couple of things, right? Because I think, sorry, I have a frog in my throat. 1 second. So here's what I think, ultimately, is that what they need to do is think about this like 4 years timeline. And in thinking about upside, I could go either way. I just don't need the upside to kick in 4 years when our window is a little bit in a different place. So if it's upside, I want you to hit that upside really relatively quickly. So like that's why – well, and we can just actually get into this. Let's name some names.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to name names. We're going to go into who we like, who we don't like, and who the Nets may like.
Great.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, and we're back. Brian, let's name some names. Who have you dug up that you've liked, that has intrigued you in your journey to find the perfect prospect for the Brooklyn Nets?
Wow, what a setup. So this is in no particular order. Well, the particular order is the way that I want to roll out the conversation. So here's who I started with is Cherboy Leandro Balmero of Argentina playing for FC Barcelona. This is via NBC Sports, who had a really nice, beautifully drawn up NBA mock draft. I really recommend it just for the aesthetics. I mean, everyone take notes. Okay, NBC's going in. The Leandro Balmero pick, though, this is sort of where I was coming from with what we were just saying, which is like I'm of the mind where I respect the volatility of the championship window. You know, I am very wary of the window, and also the window cuts both ways. Like looking at where the Warriors are this year, you know, the window it can open and close really quickly, be all over the place. You know, so things being the way they are, I would prefer it if we didn't have a stash, which Leandro Balmero is sort of a cuspy, stashy kind of player. He's very young, and he's obviously playing in the Euroleagues, which is a place where people get stashed. So having watched some Balmero tape, I hate to do this. I hate to lean into this meme.
Oh, but no. Like,
all of the Euro memes apply here in full quantity. Every bit of them, you know. And he's any of the Euro people you could name. He does that basically. His the meme is versatility, cleverness, high IQ, no single like standout skill. You know, that kind of guy, which is fine. You know, there's versions of that work. The Nets haven't really gotten a bunch of them. And when we did, and Andre Kirilenko, that just didn't work for whatever reason. He played like 5 games. So, I don't know. I mean, like in the hierarchy of needs here, is versatility one of them? If we're going with versatile Euro dudes, I like Kurex having a lot more experience with the team to get those minutes over Balmero. That situation still needs to like pan itself out. Yeah. You got babies in the room?
No, I do hear babies. I am laughing. The only reason there's exciting things about Balmero is that on Tankathon, his per game averages for the 13 games I guess he's played so far in 2020, 2021. Which I don't really fully understand. Maybe the EuroLeague kind of goes on a different schedule. He's shooting 100% from the three free throw line. 1.2 attempts per game, which is like, you know, but that's a pretty good projection. Now, the thing is, when you look into his like draft profile, over his career, he's usually been under 70% from the line. But in these 20 games, he's 100%. From the line.
And you think that's a good projection?
If you're 100% from the line, yeah. It usually means
you need to be shooting more. I mean, you said how many attempts?
Just one per game.
Yeah.
But he's hitting every single one. But sure. this is why I started laughing. Okay, this is from NBA.com the Timberwolves team site. They did a roundup of sort of reaction about Balmero. And they say, providing valuable minutes at point forward, Balmero has averaged 3 points a game, 2 assists over 11 minutes in the third division. He's playing, and I'm like, holy shit. This is what's so hard about scouting. It's like, how can you figure this thing out if he's 6'7 ball handler who's played 11 minutes a game in the third division in EuroLeague, which is like, what is that? You know, is that... Are we playing, you know, in old rusted out sort of, you know, dance halls in that's Barcelona?
I watched some footage. That's what you got pretty much. That's what we're doing. Yeah, which is why, you know, it's best not to get too. I mean, like when you're going through all this stuff, looking at the data does tend to like not help. I guess, or I don't know. Like people, I don't know that I would love to pull on a scout. Like we did have who did we have the international scout?
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. This is from Israel, right? Who
yes.
was telling us about Teodosic, yes. Milos Teodosic. Remember when that was like the hot free agent that Nets were going to get?
Yeah. Oh, man. Ooh, we were hot for Milos.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so anyways, it seems like more of a qualitative science than a quantitative one at those remote locations around the world. Suck on that, Barcelona, JK. But so my read on the way that he plays is like, yeah, I mean, like that has the potential to work out. Do we need a stash project that specializes in versatility and hitting one free throw every game for 13 games? I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that aligns with our current needs.
Well, I think the stash argument, so you have seen that, right? Like it's out there that, you know, the Nets, part of the advantages of stashing, there's twofold. It's that one, it's cheaper for your team because he's not on your books for this year. So the luxury, like getting a draft pick and him being on your roster adds to your luxury tax bill. It adds to your overall salary cap bill. But if he's stashed overseas playing for Barcelona B division, whoever, then it has no impact on your cap.
And he is an asset that exists in the world and obviously could grow and get better and better and better. The thing is, though, if you're thinking of that strategy and you're saying you're the Nets, we want to draft a guy to stash him so he isn't part of our luxury tax bill. You might as well just trade the pick for something else, right? Like, you might as well trade the pick with Torian Prince, who it feels very chilly in Torian Prince land at this point. There is not much love emanating from Brookland for Torian Prince.
They're in fairly open revolt on the internet, which doesn't feel good for anybody.
So I think, like, if you're of the mindset that we're going to stash to save money and to push off an asset, I think what the two routes that they do is they use the pick to trade Torian Prince, or you do what you did last year, which is you trade the pick to another contender for a future first round pick that maybe is like protected in the lottery. So you kind of roll over the asset. Mm-hmm. And I think they would do that over stashing. Now, Sean Marks, of course, like, you know, they got Musa and they got Rodion Skorupski. They've done international drafting before. So I don't think it's impossible. I just think if that's the strategy, I would rather see them trade the pick or roll it over to next year and trade it to, like, name any team, the Kings. Maybe the Kings won two draft picks in this draft. Sure. You know, the first round.
Yeah. Well, if you don't do that, then this pick is great for you as the better option for your stash project, which is Cheerboy Elixir Bukusevski, who we've talked about on the show.
Bukusevski's a fucking starter. So He's a starter.
If you're going to be stashing and keeping, that's Cheerboy. I watched some tape and I was expecting to see that, you know, you watch, like, they'll be like, yeah, he's like agile 7-footer from Serbia. And you're like, you watch the tape and like, that guy looks like he's got lead in his, around the waist. He's completely attached to the floor. And I will say that he passed at least that eye test of delivering on the nimbleness that was promised to me by the video curators. I liked it. I mean, obviously he's like a baby. He's a baby boy. And he needs some time, but if you're stashing and keeping, I feel like that's the better option. So my Leandro Balmero pick is the stash and flip. The old stash and flip.
And I think if you don't know who this is, so I'll just read the description of him. Okay, he's 7 foot tall with 7'3" wingspan. He weighs 201 pounds, which again is incredible to think about. I am at 201 right now. I'm trying to be less than 201, and I'm not 7 feet tall. I say I'm 6 feet tall, but I'm really like 5'10", 5'11".
5'10"? You're adding a whole 2 inches, you dog.
I'm 5'11". I'm 5'11". I slouch. Yeah. Anyways, he's 18 years old. He's almost going to be 19. He was born the day after Christmas, so that's kind of rough. You know, you might as well just be born on Christmas at that point, because the day after, it's a little The buzz is a little worn off. You know what I mean? So anyways, he shot 32% from three on 4 attempts per game. His free throw percentage, while only getting 2 attempts per game, was 78%. And free throw, if you don't know, is one of the best indicators for how good of a shooter someone actually is when they're that young. Almost 2 blocks per game, a steal, almost 3 assists, 7 rebounds, almost 10 points. But he was playing in B division for a Greece B division team. And when you watch the highlights, it is less impressive than pretty much any other draft prospect besides maybe your boy Leandro Balmero. But he's 7 foot tall and can shoot and he can handle. And, you know, let me go back to the Hollinger thing for a sec. He says the Nets won upside, right? Actually, there's a lot of upside plays and there's a lot of good role player. Like, they're both ends of the spectrum. You could get an upside guy if you want it, or you could get someone you can project to be a good role player too, where the Nets are. He's the upside play. And if I'm looking at the rest of the league and I'm trying to see who's been drafting well, the team my eye veers towards is the Denver Nuggets. And what the Denver Nuggets have done over the years, they've taken Bol Bol, which may still be awesome, someone that I really wanted the Nets to get. And they took Michael Porter Jr. right when it was the time to take him. And obviously that pick has worked out. Like, Michael Porter Jr. is one of the best young assets you can have right now in the NBA. And the Nets are in a position, because they are so good, any rookie they draft is likely not really going to help them out all that much. So if I'm Sean Marks, I could be thinking,
I'm going to use this pick to hopefully get someone in like 3 years who will be like a real valuable asset for us, as opposed to someone who may only do like the Desmond Bane. Desmond Bane may only be a shooter. He may never be anything else, and that's great, but like he's not maybe going to be worth what Pokusevski is going to be worth. I love you.
You're hot, man. You're a
fiber. Give me. I mean, why? What are we doing here? This is. You're picking 19.
Let's get just busy.
Let's take the guy who has this massive ceiling that he may be like Lauri Markkanen on his with a hangover after New Year's Eve. He may be that kind of poor
after poor December 26th.
But I mean, I think it's worth a pick. Anyone else you like?
Well, okay, so I'll just go through the names of like, I'll go quicker because we're already 40 minutes in or whatever.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, no, that's not, I like what you're doing. Well, the other question is, should we extend it to another episode? We always do that though.
Yes, I think we can. Cause I, okay. I'll do draft day trades too. And there's a couple other things we can do in that extra
episode. Perfect. So, I mean, while I'll just set this up, if you want to pull up Patrick Williams on your own, cause that's who we're going to be talking about next, who was brought to us by CBS, Cherboy Patrick Williams of Florida State. I watched a fair amount of video. Here's my takeaway. Are you ready, Mike?
Ready.
A slightly less scouted, less touted Jeff Green. And that doesn't feel like a super obvious need for what we've got going on here. Does seem a little bit lead footed himself in the same way that Jeff Green is, though. Like Jeff Green kind of makes it work and just kind of like bulldozy mid range shots. I think that there's a world where, Jeff Green's off the bench can be a thing. I don't know if that's the world we want to live in for the Nets in 2021. Mike, that doesn't seem like the world we want.
What, to want Patrick Williams to be Jeff Green?
Yeah. I mean, that style of game for me, it feels a little bit antithetical to what we're trying to do. I mean, he seems to be like kind of making his he wants to be like more offensive minded than I think we need at this position for that kind of offensive game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a free throw junkie, so he's 84% from the line. That's awesome.
Wait, this is my thing. When did you become the free throw junkie?
The thing I'll tell you about Patrick Williams, he's going to go higher. Like, there's discussion that he may go within the top eight. And I think that's crazy, having watched Florida State a bit. Like, it's this weird thing where, like, he may go above Devin Vassell, and Vassell was the way better player during the season. But because Patrick Williams is, if you don't know, he's 6'8", 225. That's a beefy dude. He obviously seems way more of an NBA player. I don't think he's not going to be there for the Nets. Just not going to be there. The Nets would have to do a trade up scenario, which we're going to talk about in our next podcast. But I don't think he's going to be there for your Brooklyn Nets. Just from what I'm hearing.
That's fair. And let me say, like, Jeff Green went, five, I think? He went high. He continues to have a good career. So, like, being Jeff Green isn't a bad thing. I didn't mean that as a pejorative. And it seems like people are higher on him than I am. I just don't see... I guess I'll just like reveal my internal thinking. I don't know that upside is where I'm at with this pick. I think with the amount of offensive power we have off, like, an upside, I think, is kind of inherently an offensive thing. I said that right? Upside is inherently, that is going to be a difficult. You're going to have a hard time distinguishing yourself as having offensive upside on this team with the amount of offensive players we have. So I think it's going to be a weird fit for that dude if he becomes the pick, and I'm not saying, I think, like, in the hierarchy of needs, I go with like self-designated amazing role player. And then like next is like, go for the upside guy, you know, in whatever version that is. And then like below that is like, you know, positional center, blah, 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 so on and so forth.
Yeah, which is kind of why I've also, like, obviously when you go into the draft, there's a lot of really good small forward types who maybe shoot really well or play defense really well. And by the time it gets to 19, they're not going to do both. Like, you're usually not going to get a true 3-and-D wing at 19 because those guys are going to go higher in the draft because that's what everyone wants. But that's why I'm also moving more towards, I think, the value for any draft at this point, but particularly for the Nets, is to get a guard, because if you're thinking about it, like, there's all these Spencer Dinwiddie rumors that basically every team in the Western Conference wants Spencer Dinwiddie, and then there's some in the Eastern Conference that also want him. And if the Nets are going to make a trade, and they don't want to trade Caris LeVert, they're going to trade Dinwiddie. And if that's the case, they're going to need a backup point guard or like a juicy guard off the bench, right? Because maybe they signed DJ Augustine, but then you want a young guard too. And that's why I kind of like some of the value that you may get in the guard slots, like Cole Anthony or Tyrell Terry or Tyrese Maxey.
Or RJ Hampton. I mean, can't think of a player more similar to Spencer Dinwiddie than RJ Hampton. I mean, literally to a T, that is. If you see a pick like that in the Tyrell Terry, RJ Hampton spot, you may begin to worry about Spencer. I would begin to worry.
Well, and so that's one last thing we'll bring up for this show, and then we'll reconvene for our next pod, which is this. It's that, so we talked about in the beginning of the show about how the NBA and the NBPA are close on a full deal, which would outline sort of what the season's going to be like. Sorry about getting messages. What we do understand is that early next week, so draft week, drafts on a Wednesday, early next week is when trades may be able to happen. We're going to know what the Nets are thinking by then, pretty much, right? Like, I think if the Nets make a deal, they're going to make it around the draft. They're going to use that draft pick, and that's going to be combined with Spencer Dinwiddie or Jared Allen or Caris LeVert or someone to use that draft pick in this draft to get Drew Holiday or Aaron Gordon or whoever they want, right? So we may know pretty soon what's going to be happening with Spencer Dinwiddie. It doesn't have to happen before the draft, but you would think any deal that they make would likely include a player and this first round pick, and that deal would either be done during the draft, which happens a lot, or going beforehand. So,
So while we do this like next episode thing, should we keister? I got like four other names. I'll keister them for the next one. Is that how we want to
keister them for the next one? Because I want to dive into the next episode that you guys will be listening to. It's all going to be about draft day trades that I really like and think are possible. And then I wanted to go through the Nets draft rules, which are going to pluck out more names. So we'll put your names within sort of the Nets draft rules. And that's the end of the episode.
Oh, wow. Great. Can't wait.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.